The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
David Bowe's in for Dory Monson here on this President's Day edition of The Dory Monson Show. It's great to be here, an honor to be here really for Dory. A lot of you are enjoying a congestion-free commute today because there's few of us out here working. I mean, if you had to pick a day to work, today's perfect. In fact, for most of these holidays, I would always, if given a choice at work, I'd say, I'll work the holiday, just give me the normal day off so that I could actually get to and fro from wherever I need to be in a much easier fashion. It's so difficult. And we'll get to some of the challenges of area traffic coming up later this hour. But right now, of course, it's time for
The Big Lead, top story.
You heard a hint of it at the top of the hour news. It's the big protest going on in Seattle and in Olympia. The Seattle one's later tonight regarding President Trump's declaration, emergency declaration, to justify his use of monies to build his border wall. Governor Jay Inslee today.
It was a terrible decision. It was an, I believe, unconstitutional decision. And I think it was a decision that threatens the basic way that we make decisions in our nation. And most importantly, it does create potential for harm for Washingtonians of a loss of funding for things that are important in Washington.
The thing that bothers me most about what he's saying is I didn't see any such announcement from Governor Inslee regarding the numerous ways in which President Obama made similar kinds of decisions when he couldn't get Congress to act the way he wanted them to. You know, he even had a program called in the White House that was We Can't Wait. So for things that he wanted to accomplish, he would say Congress hasn't acted, so they failed, so I'm going to. Well, remember, one of the options Congress has in terms of not acting is to say no. That's their way of saying we're not supporting this. It's not going to happen. There's no constitutional gridlock amendment where it says, well, if government's in gridlock, the president can do what he wants. So there's numerous things. The wall is different, and it doesn't mean necessarily that Trump is – that President Trump is justified in doing things this way. But it does mean that if you want to hold the president to account in one party, you have to do the same in your own party.
We do not know what those things are yet and will not until there are some decisions by the Department of Defense. So our legal decisions on what legal action to take is going to need to wait to see what ramifications there are in the state of Washington.
So, in other words, we're making this grand gesture and we're going to take the administration to court, but only if we can figure out some way to do it. We don't really have a standing yet because we haven't figured out how it impacts Washington, if at all. So first they have to figure out some link to Washington state, which, by the way, given our military bases here, there probably will be some at some point somewhere, but they have to figure out what it is first. But that's not going to stop either he or Attorney General Ferguson from using this to gather up some headlines for themselves. And speaking of which, Governor Inslee says he's been working with the Attorney General.
And you can be confident that we will take aggressive and very rapid and likely very successful protection for Washingtonian in the courts as soon as we find out there's any harm to Washingtonians or our ability to provide services in our state.
You know, the one challenge here is that I can see where you could have arguments about, you know, the nature of the efficiency of the wall. Is it going to be as effective? I think it's wrong to say barriers are not effective. Everybody uses gates and barriers in order to reduce ingress, if that's what you're seeking. Because it slows people down. Doesn't mean it's impenetrable. Remember, you have what, about 40, I think last I checked, I think it was 40% of illegal immigration comes from overstaying visas. And that means people are crossing the border legally via the border or via airplane, and then they're just overstaying those visas. So it's not going to cure everything. But that said, nobody says it's going to, or at least nobody rational is saying it's going to cure all illegal immigration. It's supposed to address a part of it. He says that Governor Inslee says the whole thing's a waste.
This is both the Republican Party and the Democratic Party saying your wall is really a total waste of money. He had a majority for 2 years of Republicans in the Congress, and they refused to give him the money for the wall because the Republicans knew it was a waste of money.
was a little more complicated than that, because remember, you can have a majority, but just because you have a majority of Republicans is not really the same as a majority of Democrats, by the way, because generally Democrats have a governing principle that unites them all. And that's the one word, more. Democrats tend to unite around the idea of more government involvement, more government spending, more government oversight in basically all areas of life. And they view that as a way to make life better for people. But Republicans tend to be a loose coalition of cheap Democrats, of libertarians, social conservatives, religious conservatives, business people, free marketeers. And so it's a much looser coalition of parties. That said, he is correct when he said that the Republicans failed to pass money for the wall. But again, I'd point back to when there was a president in that was supported by Governor Inslee, and when that president saw inaction by Congress and decided to act on his own, he was cheered by the governor. So, you know, that's part of the challenge.
We could be putting people through college. We could give people health care with that money. And they decided, both parties, this was a terrible waste of resources. Both parties. And so this is a situation where Congress has effectively acted and said no.
It's interesting that he was worried about the constitutionality of the border. And I can see where the border is definitely a national function constitutionally. I'm not sure the founders thought that putting people through college was the federal government's responsibility. I guess there is through the GI Bill certain benefits there, but as a general benefit that he seems to be addressing, I'm not so sure.
He believes that he's some kind of emperor that can just willy-nilly make a decision violating the clear expressed intent of the Congress. And I think that's unconstitutional. I think it's wrong. I think it's wrongheaded. And I hope we're going to get some Republicans to stand up on their hind legs and say that this is an abuse of democracy.
You can tell right there that the focus here is more on presidential ambitions than political alliances there, because there's been a number of Republicans that have stepped forward and said, we disagree with the way the president's doing this. We think this is an overstretch. You can go to National Review or conservative publications and you can see that. And you can see that with some in Congress. And some, by the way, the president would point to an aspect of law that grants the president the ability to declare an emergency and then use military funds for various kinds of construction. National Review has a column out right now saying that basically Trump has the power to do this, but it's a clear violation of the intent of the law, the spirit of the law. So it's an abuse of it. He has the authority, but it's an abuse of that authority, not a legal abuse as in an action that's illegal, but it's a legal abuse and should be reined in. Now, as I said, there's been a number of areas where President Obama was told no or had no action on the part of Congress or didn't go to Congress. And that includes his 2011 Libya intervention, where he never went to Congress for approval, despite mandates for that. The Chrysler bailout, where he pressured people with guaranteed absolute priority in getting paid back to accepting 30 cents on the dollar so politically favored parties could receive more. For Obamacare implementation, entire parts of the law were ignored because it was easier and convenient for what he was trying to do. The DREAM Act, the DACA and DAPA programs, in both cases, Congress was negotiating with Congress and gave up. He said they're not doing anything, which, again, Congress not doing something means they haven't given permission. So it would be really refreshing if you could hear the same concern addressed by both parties about their own party when it comes to presidential overreach on these kinds of powers. It'll be difficult for Congress here because, as I said, there is a part of the law that seems to grant the president some leeway, and it doesn't. That leeway would need to be addressed by Congress, and hopefully they will. I mean, look, I think we've put too much emphasis on the president being able to handle any and all things, whether he's got a D next to his name or an R. But that brings us to the second big lead.
The big lead, big local.
Joining us now is Cairo's Hannah Scott to talk with us about the plot to give Seattle the power to raise more money off you via traffic cams. Hannah?
So this is all in the name of easing congestion. The city of Seattle wants to expand the use of these automated traffic enforcement cameras, which right now we use for some areas, red light tickets, and also speed zones, especially around schools where you can get ticketed just by them snapping a picture of your license plate. They want to expand that, though, to other other areas, and they first need the legislature's permission. There's a couple of different bills, one of them in the Senate by Democrat Mark Elias.
This is really designed for those places where it's really difficult to get a patrol officer there, you know, to provide one more tool to make sure that folks aren't blocking intersections, blocking pedestrian facilities, you know, blocking those bus-only lanes. Especially in parts of Seattle, it's really tough to get a patrol officer there to police the law because we've got space constraints. And so I think this is just a really common sense way of making sure that people are observing those laws.
It's so tough to get anybody anywhere in Seattle.
I know, right? So, but that's the idea. Yeah. That's the argument here. So this would allow the automated enforcement cameras to nab people with tickets for cars in bus-only lanes, blocking the box or blocking the intersection, blocking crosswalks, and also for cars that block emergency vehicle lanes or where a bus is unloading and loading passengers. Lee says tickets would be about the same as a red light ticket that comes from the cameras. They're about $136.
And just like the red light infractions, it's not considered a moving violation when the camera issues it. So it's more like a, you know, a parking ticket or something like that. But it is just one more tool.
And the goal here again is to ease congestion.
You know, moving people efficiently into the city on those transit only lanes is really important, especially at rush hour. And if there's a car that's blocking that transit only lane so that, you know, the bus is carrying hundreds of people sometimes over the course of an hour, thousands of people, you know, that's having an impact on the commute for a lot of people. And we want to make sure that people respect the rules, stay out of the transit only lanes, and that the buses can operate to get everyone into downtown and into congested corridors, particularly during rush hour.
I was about to say, maybe congestion when it comes to buses, but not for cars.
And that's not the goal here.
They never care about the cars. How many times have you been in Seattle and had a bus blocking your lane when you're wanting to make a turn, because it's trying to make a turn, it's blocking the whole intersection. It's been now, to be fair, I've also seen people block buses, which is outrageous. I always give them
and that slows down everything. The argument here, so Seattle's mayor is the one who asked, Jenny Durkin asked for this.
Shocking.
Mike O'Brien also asked for this. And what they said is, and also what Senator Leah says is, there's however many people are on a bus that however many people of a bus holds
right.
versus the one or two people in a car. So the needs of the many outweigh the needs
but
of the few.
But it's not one or two people in a car. It's the one or two people in every car all the way backward. And by the way, same with the pedestrians. How many times if you're trying to make a right turn in Seattle
yep.
and it starts blinking red, which means, by the way, it doesn't mean hurry up and run across the crosswalk. It means stop going, stop entering that roadway. But you cannot make a right turn in Seattle because the onslaught of people is continuous and you can't make that right turn. And then they're so holier than thou, they won't look over their shoulder to actually give you the courtesy of telling you, hey, I see a car is going to turn there. I know that I can safely go because now they've seen and they're not going to step in front of me. You've got none of that. So I'm not buying any of their whole we want to relieve congestion for commuters nonsense other than we want to do what transit wants us to do here. You know, and which, by the way, I would find value in that if they were going for these other things. But you take a look at some of the bus-only lanes, especially like the new one on 4th Avenue. I don't know if you've seen that underneath the highway there to West Seattle. Have you seen new bus-only lane? The sign that announces it is approximately 3 feet before the bus-only. So there's no way that anyone, unless you know ahead of time, could possibly not violate the law on that intersection.
I mean, and I have that issue with bus-only lanes, carpool lanes all across the state.
I can never.
I'm in carpool lanes more often, and I realize that's too late.
Yeah,
all the time. But I get your point.
And those cameras would just be clicking. $136, which, by the way, you know, $136. Maybe it would sting, but I could live with it. But there's plenty of people out there where $136. Goodbye. Extra income for the month.
Yeah.
I mean, that's really a tough. Tickets are a lot of money when you think about average wages. And I feel like for a lot of people who are in this, you know, in the revenue raising business in politics, they forget that when they're asking for, oh, just $136 like a parking violation is not going to hurt your insurance. Yet, by the way, they also said when these other cameras were coming, well, it's only for these school zones are special, you know, and now it's like, oh, you guys are used to the school zone. So let's turn up the heat in that pot of water you're in, Mr. Frogs. And now we'll put these cameras everywhere. Sorry.
And that's okay.
Have they targeted the money? Have they said where it's going to go?
As for where the money will go?
I would like to see the dollars that go from folks that are breaking the rules go to help make our system a little safer, a little bit better for everyone, including the folks maybe that were blocking the box. Are there some safety improvements we could make that would make it easier for them to follow the law and clearer as to where they should be.
So it looks like that's kind of what the bill says now. They would create an active transportation safety account under the state treasury where all the monies from the tickets would go in and be used for safety projects for bicycle, pedestrians, and non-motorist safety, which are going to be buses, transit.
Yeah, so it goes away from the roads, the drivers that are actually paying this, not toward fixing potholes or any streets, which, by the way, remember Seattle claims that numerous bridges and overpasses and other things are structurally unsound and are disastrous, and nobody's prioritizing this because it's not as sexy to prioritize the things that you need to maintain as it is to build new things or create new programs. So I'm not buying that. That sounds like a big slush fund to me anyway for PR people.
So here's the deal. And I asked Michael Bryan this when I interviewed him about this before the legislature had a bill. The red light cameras, they have to go to a certain fund, right? They have to go. It's, again, like sidewalk road improvements, things like that. 20% of it have to go to sidewalks, I believe, around schools. But in the budget process in Seattle, this last budget process, Sally Bagshaw did a maneuver where that money then went to the general fund. Uh-huh. So I asked about whether there would be some sort of protection with this.
Right.
We haven't gotten there yet, but that's something I'll be watching because I know Michael Bryan told me, and you know, now he's not rerunning, but he said he did not want anyone to be, he didn't like what Sally Bagshaw did back in this last budget cycle, and he wants to make sure this money is protected from anybody doing that in the future. So we'll see what happens with that. Also, really quickly, I want to point out, this is not Seattle specific. This bill specifically allows every municipality in the state to do this, just FYI.
So the red light cameras are coming your way. Whatever town you're in, get ready for a new fundraiser. You know, you'll get they'll raise the levy lid. They'll raise the, which will diminish all the property tax relief you're scheduled to get. They'll raise the red light cameras, and there'll always be an excuse why they're needed, why we need more money. And so you'll just continue to bleed to death. This reminds me of the old way they used to do medicine, you know, putting leeches on you, you know, just sucking the blood dry of the taxpayer out there. So just finding a new excuse to do it. And by the way, again, they're going to hit the people that are driving, which, you know, again, if you're breaking the law, I get it. There are rules to follow. People need to follow the rules. You shouldn't be blocking intersections anyway. In most towns, I'd say I'm okay. I still think ticket's too high because of what I said before. But in Seattle, it's impossible to follow the rules. I mean, there's just too many times. I avoid blocking an intersection like the plague. I like to give a lot of space. But when I do, in some intersections in town, nobody else does. And it gets to a point where
every intersection I'm in is blocked all the time. Not by me, but in front of me all the time. And look, there's been no secret. Seattle's mayor, nobody, they all have made no secret about the fact
they don't want
that
cars
their priority,
here.
They don't want cars here. That's so the deal.
So we know why. I mean, when they're saying, hey, this is congestion relief, we know it's, hey, what we wanted to do is bleed all drivers dry, and we want to make it harder and harder and harder for you to ever drive into town. So, you know, congratulations, mission accomplished. Hannah Scott, thanks so much.
You bet.
All right, David Bowe's in for Dory Monson coming up. We've got the awesome audio of the day. I have it on good authority from Nicole that much of it will be about Tacoma's recycling program.
We're done with that story. Done.
Oh. I thought we could maybe, you know, stretch that baby out
audio.
Just a little bit more. All right, so stay tuned for awesome audio. David Bowe's in for Dory Monson here on 97.3 Cairo FM. David Bowe's in for Dory Monson here on 97.3 Cairo FM. This is the time of the day when we get to the best audio versions of the stories that we've covered. And that awesome audio is brought to you by Brown Bear Car Wash.
This is Dory Monson's awesome audio clips of the day.
Starting with awesome audio where we have AOC, the congresswoman who now lives by her own initials, who is a media sensation. She's young, beautiful, outspoken, socialist, and just a bit deranged, willing to say absolutely anything. No filter. She's like young, attractive Trump, except on the left-hand side of things. So she's getting all kinds of media play, and she says it's weirding her out, which brings us to
number three.
But here in D.C., it's like so weird. It's like everybody is like a spy. Like, it's so bizarre. It's like you could go out to get a cup of coffee and the person that's like sitting at a table in the corner of the restaurant's like, you know, like, then they go and like they text all their friends that they saw so-and-so at this cafe, and it's like triangulation, and it's super weird. It's just like super weird. So New York is really interesting because there's a lot of anonymity out in public.
So the congresswoman is just freaking out about Washington, D.C. But at the same time, she's concerned about all this spying when she tweets about and then Facebook Lives a running commentary of everything that she's doing. There has never been a time where spies are less necessary to follow someone's actions, right? Just have to tune into their Facebook account.
No matter how you feel about the law, you know, I think it's a moral abomination. I think it's like the Berlin Wall.
Yeah, it's just like the Berlin Wall, except the part where it's not designed to keep people in. We don't have armed guards killing people if they're trying to escape the United States. We don't have landmines there. In other words, the Berlin Wall was a unique thing that was used as a tool of a totalitarian government to oppress people. The other wall, even if you don't like it, is simply designed to curb an illegal behavior. And so you might think it's ineffective. You might think it's unsightly, but it's not at all like the Berlin Wall, right? In the meantime, we also have the pleasantry of dads. Dads, you know, turning to a more pleasant topic, dads who sometimes have difficulty with their kids. And that difficulty sometimes means dad, in order to get kids to behave themselves, must do something dramatic in order to get that teen back on the straight and narrow. In this case, a viral video of a dad embarrassing his teenage daughter during a school drop-off.
Number two.
Hey, bye, sweet girl. Have a good day at school.
Oh, there's a
puddle. Bye, Kate.
Can you
bye, Kate.
Get out.
I love you, Kate.
Stay
have out. A great day at school, Kate. Bye, Cordelia. Bye, Emma. I love you, Kate. I'm Kate Downey's father. Hi, Principal Dennis. Hi, Principal Dennis. I'm Kate Downey's father, and I love her. I'm going to miss her all day. I love you, Kate.
It's such gold.
I would have been mortified, but I love him.
Yeah, I love him, too, although I just would have been just horrified. You can bet that there's got to be some side story here where
she's in trouble.
Yeah, she was warned. She wouldn't do it. So now dad's like, okay, well, two can play this game.
Right.
And what a wonderful way to do it. So I'm rooting for him. And then we come to, and speaking of wonderful and fantastic, there's a young boy that he's from Texas. He moved into Washington State, but he's carried his charitable efforts here to Washington in a project that he calls Project Freedom Ride. And originally I saw the name Project Freedom Ride, and I just assumed it was something about veterans. You know, it sounds like a charity on behalf of veterans. But in this case, he was struck by the need for the dogs of Texas to find a place to call home, a permanent home. Too many were in shelters, and they would end up being put down. And he wanted to find a safe place for them and permanent families. So when he moved to Washington, he continued these efforts. And he took out his video, his cell phone. He created videos of each dog. His mom would post them on Facebook, and they basically went viral. He ended up on Ellen. He ended up getting big checks. He's raised all kinds of money, and he's just done tremendous things in order to find dogs permanent homes, both in Texas and now in Washington State. The next one he has, by the way, is in Stanwood coming up. But this was this young man, Roman, and his mom.
Number one.
He was four. And when we lived in Texas at the time, he would see a rescue trying to get dogs adopted outside of PetSmart.
And I just wanted to know what I could do to help them because I saw that most of them weren't getting adopted. I was just really worried because if they didn't find a home, they could have got put down.
I just love his voice. He's just adorable, isn't he?
So cute.
I think as his mom, it was eye-opening because I was like, oh, my gosh, he sees a problem and he wants to fix it.
So King Five ran this great story. He's trying to fix it, which, you know, I applaud. you compare this kid to a number of kids that are trying to, quote unquote, fix problems, and they're out just kind of spouting the usual propaganda stuff, blaming one person or another, a politician who doesn't care about the future, blah, blah, blah. This is a much more hands-on, hey, here's a problem that I actually can do something about. I'm doing something about it, and I love what I'm doing.
Project Freedom Ride relocates unwanted animals out of high-kill areas in Texas and then takes them up to the Pacific Northwest where they will have a better chance at finding home.
I just love that raspy voice. He sounds like he's just escaped the Little Rascals, doesn't he?
Yes, the movie.
Yeah.
Perfect. PFR has saved over 1,500. I want to get every dog in the world adopted. I think we might be able to do it in the next 15 years or so.
No wonder his videos are so popular.
Optimism.
Yeah.
I love it.
I do too. And he's been doing a great job. They show a video of each and every dog. They put it up on Facebook. Like I say, he was featured on Ellen. She wrote him a big check to help with his costs. They've got multiple people showing up that want to adopt a dog. And by the way, I was just talking with some acquaintances of mine that were looking to get a dog. And somebody was outside of a store with a box of dogs. And they wanted, like, I think it was $300 per dog. When I was a kid, they'd have a box of dogs and it was like, will you take a dog home? You know, if you looked like a human, you could get a dog, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you're okay and promise not to hurt the dog. Nowadays, it was, hey, I've got this dog. So you need a dog? Oh, yeah, sure. That'll be $300. What? $300? And this was not purebred, you know, some kind of purebred paper dog. It was just, you know, a dog.
Hmm. They probably already paid for the shots and stuff.
I don't
reimburse for that.
But yeah, well, that's what they'll say. But still, I don't know. All I can tell you is, it seemed like that getting a dog was much simpler back in the day. That's all I'm saying. In this case, though, I thought it was – you'd think that usually the box was kind of a charitable effort. People would find puppies or something, and they wanted to give them away. Now it seems like it's more of a, you know, kind of a funding effort or something. And I don't know. Not the same. This little fella here trying to save all the dogs, not just in Washington State but in Texas. Who can't root for that? Great kid. And glad to have him on the Dory Monson Show here on 97.3 Cairo FM. Has been a pleasure to be with you here on this holiday vacation day for Dory Monson, this President's Day. But since it's the end of the show, the final segment of the show, what it means is that it's time for
today's sign that the end is near.
You know, it seems like everybody is being offended these days. Everybody's obsessed with getting offended, being offended, and staying offended. But sometimes you hold out hope that a group might be able to take a joke, that there's still hope for humanity if professional organizations can make fun of themselves, say. Let's use flight attendants for an example. If they see a skit on Saturday Night Live or something that maybe makes a reference to stewardesses, you'd think they might be able to swallow it and say, okay, it was a joke. Let's live with it. But the union that represents flight attendants at American Airlines is calling for an investigation into a video that went viral over the weekend. By viral, I don't know what that even means anymore, how many hits that guarantees. But I'll tell you,
a lot.
Calling for an investigation guarantees a lot more, right?
Exactly. I
mean, as soon as you say, we're going to investigate this, now I'm going to click on it. I'm going to watch it. You're going to watch it, right?
Yep.
Everybody listening is going to say, hey, I heard about a viral video. I want to watch that. In this case, the video featured American Airlines employees in a burlesque-like routine that the union says was demeaning to flight attendants and crew members. You know, again, this is flight attendants and crew members on their off time. Apparently, they are on the payroll of American mm-hmm. Airlines, but it's on their off time creating their own skit. And they're being told it's demeaning, even though, right, the employers are doing it themselves. So, you know, they're making a joke about themselves and about customers and about what they do for a living. So it can't be that demeaning. Otherwise, people wouldn't do it, right? Multiple people. You can see one maybe deranged employee that you might want to get rid of. But in this case, multiple people are involved in making this skit where...
Why is it demeaning? Can't it just be fun?
Right. Right. Yeah, they're having a good time. They're singing Hey Big Spender, and they're talking about their new Executive Platinum customer, which, by the way, even Executive Platinum is funny by itself. Like, I got an advertisement the other day for the Sapphire Banking, you know, and I didn't know. And my first thought was, oh, I want that. You know, that's
it was
Sapphire
worked
banking.
On you.
Yeah. Sapphire
Sounds
banking. That
fancy.
Must be. Yeah. That must be much better than the normal banking I'm having. Sapphires are valuable. And so then I laughed at myself thinking, you know, it's ridiculous. They're trying to just get you for more fees or something. And next thing you know, there'll be, you know, Executive Sapphire and Diamond Sapphire. But in this case, they're making fun of this new level of customer service. And it's Hey Big Spender, because anybody who's been on a flight lately knows to get to a certain level of service, you are a big spender, right? I mean, and
yes.
You're catered to. I mean, every whim is catered to now. I'm pretty much a budget flyer, and I find it hard to just get my luggage on board now. I'm so cheap. I'm one of those guys that's like, how many different layers of clothing can I wear on this
How can you roll them to fit it into your, in my case, my purse?
Can I put it all in my coat? You know, how many... exactly. Can I avoid any of these carry-on fees? So the president of the Association of Professional Flight Attendants said in a statement, quote, "We want the facts about the company's involvement, and we want answers. What was portrayed in the skit was not sanctioned by the airline and is not representative of the 27,000 professional flight attendants who take great care of millions of customers every year," the airline said in a statement sent to employees Sunday night. Was anyone under, I mean, look, for those of you who have not seen the viral video, were any of you under the impression, just hearing to this point of the story, that the few people that were involved in singing Hey Big Spender represented all 27,000 professional flight attendants? Does anyone actually go into watching something like this and think, oh, they're representing everyone? No one does, ever. And yet we like to be morally outraged. So we pretend that, oh, yeah, they're representing all of us, those SOPs. Bees. How could they possibly do that?
On the other hand, this got a bunch of attention and it was a great marketing ploy.
Yeah, somewhere around there, Virgin Airlines, like, why didn't we think of that?
There is no more Virgin.
Oh, well, that's why, because they didn't
Alaska
think of
now.
It. Right. Yeah. See, Alaska, you can pick up on the Hey Big Spender, the skit that CBS, and again, now CBS has it. If CBS has it, then every other network's going to have it. Mm-hmm. So the supposed outrage that is that drives the union now to investigate this will lead to hundreds of thousands of more views, all kinds of added extra publicity, and it'll probably lead to some kind of professional admonishment of people who were just having a good time at a party. You know, I mean, for crying out loud, at some point you just got to say, you know what, that's not us, and just let it go. You know, that those were employees venting, you know, that they have tough lives. They're, you know, traveling across the country away from their families long periods of time. They're just having a good time, obviously. So we're just going to let that slide. Wouldn't you react more positively about both the union and American Airlines if you found out that their overall response was, hey, you know what? Live and let live. This is a pretty funny video. They're having a good time. It doesn't really fit our professional standards, but this is what happens at a party with karaoke. Right? I mean, wouldn't you just be like in awe that maybe the world wasn't ending after all?
Right.
But of course, that didn't happen. And that's the point. This is why this is now part of the end of the world. The out of work group, by out of work, I don't mean unemployed. I mean, when they're away from work, the group's called Salute and they perform at various shows. I don't know how long they'll be in. They'll probably be dissolved soon. It'll be the last Salute. But speaking of dissolved bands, REM, a once very hip and popular group, especially in the 90s, now a dissolved group, but still very active when it comes to their music being used for political purposes, at least when it comes to President Trump. They had expressed outrage before when he used "It's the End of the World as We Know It" and "I Feel Fine" at a 2015 political rally. This time, they found out that Trump had tweeted a meme featuring the 90s hit song, "Everybody Hurts." And in this case, the meme showed critics of President Trump watching his State of the Union speech, lawmakers like Senator Bernie Sanders and Kamala Harris looking stoic and sad watching the president deliver his speech. And it was
kind of funny.
Yeah, and it was set to this video. REM's outraged.
This song is used for everything. All sorts of funny.
Everything, exactly. And I just thought, you know, I know it's your song, it's your property. They immediately called Twitter and demanded it be taken down. It was, again, an embarrassment since, you know, it's either wrong for everybody to make the meme or it's not wrong. You know, you shouldn't be picking and choosing. All in all, it's a compliment to REM and their music that everybody, both sides of the aisle, can unite and say, this song, when set to certain videos, is always funny. But they couldn't take a joke. David Bowes in for Dory Monson here on 97.3 Cairo FM.
Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. You're really a fantastic audience.